This is not going to be a pleasant experience. You're going to see and hear things that are not going to be very nice.
Experts divide serial killing into two general types, organized and disorganized. An organized killer brings everything he needs to complete the murder. A disorganized killer improvises.
Begin. Listener discretion is advised.
In southwest Wisconsin was the town of Raymond, Wisconsin. I say was because in 2019, Raymond officially became a village. But back in 1999, the town had a population of 3,500 people. Early on the morning, July 21st, 1999, a man and his teenage daughter were walking their dog on a picturesque country road in Raymond. It had stormed the night before. As they walked, they noticed some drag marks in the dirt from the road into a cornfield. Then their dog ran into the field. They followed the dog. They discovered the dead body of a young woman. It was clear that she had died a violent death. Bruises were clearly visible and they were all over her body. The daughter thought that the woman's arm was broken because it was behind her in an unnatural position. The medical examiner determined that the woman had only been dead for about a day before she was found. She had been tortured for a long time before her death, possibly for years. She was slightly malnourished. As the father and daughter noted, her body was badly bruised. Several ribs had recently been broken, but those weren't the only injuries to her ribs. Several of them had been broken before and healed. It appeared that her throat had been scalded, as if she had been forced to drink something incredibly hot. Her nose was broken. Her left ear was deformed because it had been cut. Her lips were split open. She had been struck on the head repeatedly. There were 4 lacerations on her scalp. There were chemical burns over 25% of her body. There were odd half-loop marks on her body that the medical examiner couldn't explain. She had also been branded several times. It appeared she had been sexually assaulted because there was blunt force trauma on her genitals. Finally, she had a road-type rash injury that appeared to be from dragging. The medical examiner believed that the road rash happened after she was dead. Ultimately, the woman died of sepsis pneumonia caused by her extensive injuries. She probably died the day before her body was found. She died somewhere other than the field. She was dragged from a vehicle, which left the road rash mark, and then left in the field. There was no clues to the woman's identity at the scene. She was dressed in a men's western-style gray shirt with a red floral design on the front and snap buttons. She was also wearing black sweatpants, but she didn't have anything on her feet. The police thought that the shirt might help identify her, or at least be a clue as to where she came from. They learned that throughout 1984, that shirt style was sold throughout the United States, so it did not help them narrow down the geographical area where the woman may have came from. Experts thought she was between the ages of 18 to 30, but she was possibly as old as 35. Her teeth were in poor condition and had not been taken care of. There was also speculation that she was cognitively impaired. The woman did not match any missing persons report. The police released sketches of the woman, but they did not generate any leads. After 2 months after the body was found, she was interred at the Holy Family Cemetery in Caledonia, Wisconsin. Her grave marker was engraved, "Daughter, Jane Doe." Then the dates for when her body was found and her burial were also engraved. Finally, there was a statement, "Gone but not forgotten." The statement proved to be correct because over the next two decades, there were professional and amateur investigations into her identity, which would hopefully lead to the person who brutalized and ultimately killed her. One lead the police followed up on was that she was Andrea Bowman. Andrea was born Alexis Miranda Badger on June 23, 1974, in New Orleans, Louisiana. She was immediately given up for adoption. When she was 21 months old, she was adopted by the Bowman family, who lived in Michigan. They gave her the name Andrea. Late winter 1989, 14-year-old Andrea and her adoptive parents lived in Hamilton, Michigan. Hamilton is on the other side of Lake Michigan from Raymond, where the Jane Doe's body was found. In March 1989, Andrea told staff members at school that she was having problems at home and didn't want to go home. Someone at the school called the police. Andrea was interviewed, and she said that her adoptive father, Dennis Bowman, had been sexually abusing her since she was 13 years old. The police questioned Dennis, and he said that Andrea was lying. He claimed that he and his wife, Brenda, had recently revealed to Andrea that she was adopted and she had been acting out ever since. On March 11, 1989, Andrea took part in a band festival. By all accounts, she was in a good mood. She then returned home and she was supposed to do homework. That night, Brenda was working and Dennis showed up at her place of employment. He informed her that Andrea had stolen some money and ran away. Dennis and Brenda reported her missing and she was labeled a runaway. Andrea went missing 10 years before the Jane Doe's body was found. So Andrea would have been 25 when the body was found. This put her in the age range of Jane Doe. The police tracked down Andrea's biological mother and got a DNA sample from her. The Jane Doe was not Andrea.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We take this few seconds off to inform you, our valued loyal listener, about the best health and fitness podcast shows from the Nespod Studios. Join us as we give you the best of the best health and wellness updates you can rely on for the treatment of chronic health problems. Classic functional medicine back to basics health tips and special updates from the best doctors in the United States of America. Check out this health and wellness podcast shows. Explore Health Talk Weekly, Healthy Lifestyle Matters, Excellent Health Digest, Healthy and Free Daily, and last but not least, Weekly Health and Fitness Corner. Also, check out Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told fiction podcast, for that real life on the go experience with the 27-year-old golden boy who made our guest invite number one list. He tells us about his story as it happens in real time and in real life. It's Nasty Boy CC, the truest story never told. Go get a load of that happiness, because happiness is healthy as we know it. Join us every week as we continue to provide you the best of health and fitness wellness updates from around the globe. Enjoy the show.
And now, back to our episode.
The police also checked if the Jane Doe was Tina Ambrosio, who lived in Phoenix, Arizona. On June 11, 1996, about 3 years before Jane Doe was murdered, 34-year-old Ambrosio called her mother. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. She told her mother she would call her again 3 days later. Her family never heard from her again. But DNA testing proved that she wasn't the Jane Doe. Another possibility was 23-year-old Karen Wells. Wells lived in Haskell, Oklahoma. In April 1994, she was on a road trip. She was driving from her home to Bergen, New Jersey, to visit a friend. On April 12, 1994, she stopped about 200 miles from Bergen in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and checked into a motel. Around 7 p.m., she called her friend and told her that she was at the motel. She planned on eating at nearby McDonald's. Her friend said she would drive to the motel and meet her. She estimated that she would arrive around midnight. About an hour after the call, Wells went to the motel's lobby and asked the staff for directions to the closest McDonald's. She then got into her rented 1993 Plymouth Acclaim and drove off. Her friend arrived just after midnight, and Wells wasn't in her room. The motel employee led her into the room. All Wells' belongings were there, but she wasn't in the room. 5 hours later, her car was found abandoned on a county road about 35 miles from the motel. The car was out of gas, and the hazard lights were switched on, but they weren't working because the battery was dead. Both the driver and the passenger doors were open. In the car, the police found a pair of shoes, several empty soda bottles, and trash, including fries, from a Hardee's fast food restaurant. There was also a little bit of marijuana. The police also said there were other unspecified indications of criminal activity, but they did not clarify what they meant by that. In the ditch near the car, the police found Wells' change purse containing some money. The police thought that the car had been driven off-road because it was scratched and splattered with mud. The odometer also had an extra 600 to 700 miles that couldn't be accounted for. Raymond, where the Jane Doe was found, is 720 miles from Carral, where Wells went missing. But the police had no idea where Jane Doe was held captive and murdered. For all they knew, she could have been killed someplace like Cleveland, which is 300 miles from Carral, and then dumped in Raymond. Wells went missing 3 years before the Jane Doe was found, so she would have been 26 when the Jane Doe was found. But with DNA, the police also confirmed that the Jane Doe wasn't Karen Wells. In December 2012, the police released a new composite image of the Jane Doe. But still, no one came forward and identified the woman. Then, the following year, in October 2013, the woman's body was exhumed. They got bone samples for isotope analysis. Isotope analysis is a way to trace where someone possibly lived. What we eat and the tap water we drink affect the oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, and hydrogen in our bones on a molecular level. A device called a mass spectrometer can measure these variations. The analysis determined that she may have lived part of her life in Alaska, Montana, or southern Canada. But once again, it did not generate any leads. The police were going to have genetic genealogy done on the DNA. On September 23, 2019, a person described as a concerned citizen in Cape Coral, Florida, contacted the police. She told them that 64-year-old Linda LaRoche had talked about killing someone when she lived in Illinois. The police investigated LaRoche. She was born in LaSalle, Wisconsin in October 1955. Her adult life was spent mostly in Illinois. In 1999, she lived in McHenry, Illinois with her husband and 5 children. McHenry is about 50 miles from Raymond. She worked as a registered nurse and led a church youth group. Many of the group members thought she was accepting and Christ-like. After the concerned citizen contacted the police looked at LaRoche's Facebook. She usually posted several times a week. Her posts made her look like a family-oriented woman who loved animals and seafood. She was still a Christian and often made posts about her faith. She also made posts about her various charities that she donated to. For her bio, she wrote, "Above all, be honest, be kind. Treat people with love and forgiveness. Don't tolerate disrespect." The police talked to LaRoche's children and her husband at the time. Her ex-husband called her a force to be reckoned with. They also knew who the victim was. Her legal name was Peggy Johnson, but most knew her as Peggy Schrader. Schrader was her mother, Diane's maiden name. Peggy also had a brother, Jesse. Her father, Scott Johnson, was in the lives of Diane, Peggy, and Jesse. The family lived in Harvard, Illinois, which is about 20 miles from McHenry, where LaRoche and her family lived. On November 25, 1994, 5 years before the murder, 41-year-old Diane died. This left 18-year-old Peggy on her own. Peggy was described as sweet, it wouldn't hurt a fly. She was also cognitively impaired. Unfortunately, Peggy found herself homeless. After she became homeless, she went to a medical center in McHenry, where Linda LaRoche worked, and asked for help. LaRoche met Peggy, and then offered her a job as a nanny slash housekeeper in exchange for room and board. LaRoche's family said that Peggy was forced to sleep under the stairs in a small crawl space. She would have unexplained bruises and marks on her body. LaRoche's former husband said that one day in the summer of 1999, 5 years after Peggy came to live with them, he arrived home and Peggy's dead body was on the floor. She was 23 years old. LaRoche told her husband that Peggy had overdosed on drugs. She said she was going to take care of the body. 2.5 hours later, she returned without Peggy's body. On October 6, 2019, as the police were investigating Linda LaRoche, she was arrested in Florida. She was driving her new Mercedes C300 when she crossed the median and collided with another car. Her blood alcohol level was 0.330, which is 4 times the legal limit. At that point, people can black out and can even die from alcohol poisoning. She tried to walk away from the collision, but then laid down. She was lying on the ground when police arrived. Luckily, no one was hurt in the collision. The cars received minor damage. LaRoche told the arresting officer that she did not remember driving. She also asked if she hit someone. She was also confused as to why they weren't taking her home. It turned out that this wasn't the police's first contact with LaRoche at Cape Coral. In 2019, the police were called to her and her husband's home 7 times. Her husband filed for divorce 6 days before the police got the tip. The police interviewed Linda LaRoche and she admitted she abused Peggy but denied killing her. She said the last time she saw Peggy was in the summer of 1999. She came home and Peggy was pouring some pills down the sink drain. She then collapsed. LaRoche said that she was tired of dealing with Peggy and didn't want a drug addict around her children. She said she dropped Peggy off at her mother's home. The police talked to LaRoche's mother and she claimed she had never met Peggy. The police confronted LaRoche about what her mother told them and she changed her story. She said that she had dropped Peggy off at someone's home, but couldn't remember who. The next day, she had a third story. She claimed she drove to Raymond and let Peggy out of the car. She then drove away. Peggy wasn't injured when she last saw her. On November 7, 2019, over 20 years after Peggy Johnson died from her extensive injuries after years of being tortured, 66-year-old Linda LaRoche was arrested. One question that many people had was anyone looking for Peggy? Her mother had already died, which led to her going to live with the LaRoche family. Her father, who had not been involved in her life, had also died. Her brother, Jesse, died in 1998, a year before Peggy was killed. However, her aunt published 2 classified ads in the newspaper asking for Peggy to contact her. But Peggy was never reported missing. Linda LaRoche went to trial in March 2022. The trial lasted a week, and then the jury deliberated for 4 hours. She was found guilty of first-degree intentional homicide and hiding a corpse. In May 2022, she was sentenced to life without the chance of parole. In November 2019, the same month that Linda LaRoche was arrested, the police made progress in another case we discussed in this video. On March 11, 1989, 14-year-old Andrea Bowman went missing from her home in Hamilton, Michigan. In November 2019, her adoptive father, Dennis Bowman, was arrested, but was not for Andrea's murder. On September 9, 1980, 9 years before Andrea went missing, 25-year-old Kathleen Doyle was at her home in Norfolk, Virginia. Doyle was a newlywed. Her husband was in the Navy, and in September 1980, he was deployed on the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower. A man broke into her house, raped her, strangled her, and stabbed her to death. Her body was found 2 days later. The case sat cold until 2018. Then investigators began the process of genetic genealogy. It eventually led them to Dennis Bowman. In November 2019, Bowman was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Shortly after Dennis Bowman was arrested, he confessed to killing his 14-year-old stepdaughter, Andrea. He said he threw her body out in the neighbor's garbage. But he then later told the police that her remains could be found buried on the property where he used to live. The police went to the property and found some skeletal remains. Through DNA testing, the police determined it was the remains of Andrea Bowman. After 30 years, her body had been found and her murder had been solved. One of the more disturbing aspects of the murder was that the property where her remains were found wasn't the home where they lived when Andrea was killed. Dennis and his wife Brenda had moved there shortly afterward. Dennis had dug up the remains and moved them after they moved. Dennis claimed on the day that he killed her, he came home and found Andrea with her bags packed. She told him she was going to tell people that he had been molesting her. He either punched or pushed her, and she fell down the stairs. He then hid her body in the barn on their property. He later said he dismembered her with a machete and an axe. He then buried her in the backyard. A year or two later, he dug up the remains and moved them to the new property. In June 2020, Dennis Bowman pleaded guilty to the murder of Kathleen Doyle 40 years after she was killed. He was given 2 life sentences. In December 2021, he pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the death of his adopted daughter, 14-year-old Andrea. He was sentenced to 35 to 50 years in prison. At the time of this recording, 74-year-old Dennis Bowman is serving his sentence at the River North Correctional Center in Independence, Virginia. Unfortunately, the 2 other disappearances we discussed in this episode, Tina Ambrosio and Karen Wells, have not been solved. They have never been found, and if they were killed, their murderers have not been identified. In March 2023, Linda LaRoche appealed her sentence, citing new evidence. The new evidence involves another case. On December 9, 1999, about 5 months after Peggy Johnson was killed, the body of a woman was found in the Greenbelt Nature Preserve in North Chicago, Illinois. This is only about 35 miles from where Peggy's body was found. Very similar to Peggy's murder, the woman had been tortured before her death. She had been burned and beaten in the head. A few days after the body was found, 21-year-old Jeremy Tweedy talked about the dead woman to an undercover police officer posing as a sex worker. At the time, Tweedy was living in a rundown motel in Wadsworth, Illinois. Tweedy claimed that another motel resident, 24-year-old Jason Strong, picked up the woman and brought her back to his motel room. He raped and beat her to death. Then they, along with 27-year-old Jason Johnson, put the body in a van and dumped the body. Strong and Johnson were both interviewed and they confessed as well. Strong said that the night before the body was found, he had burned her with hot wax. He struck her in the head with his fist and a tequila bottle. Strong was charged with first-degree murder. Tweedy made a plea deal. He would testify against Strong in exchange for pleading guilty to obstruction of justice with a 2-year jail sentence. In September 2000, Johnson was given 3 years after pleading guilty to concealing a homicide. Jason Strong went to trial in October 2000. By that time, both he and Johnson had recanted their confessions. Tweedy had given 6 contradictory statements. There was no physical evidence that connected Strong to the murder. Nevertheless, he was found guilty. A month later, he was sentenced to 46 years in prison. Strong maintained he was innocent. Then in 2006, using dental records, the body was identified. She was 34-year-old Mary Kate Sunderland, a cognitively impaired woman from Carpentersville, Illinois. Her family lost contact with her in September 1999, about 2 months before her body was found. Mary Kate had cut off contact with her family. She had come under the influence of two women who had a history of exploiting elderly and vulnerable people. Her family told her they were stealing from her. The woman convinced her that her family was lying and she should disown them. 3 weeks before her body was found, she married Gonzalo Chimizio. It's speculated that the two women sold her to Gonzalo. The police in Carpentersville were conducting a missing person investigation regarding Mary Kate. In 2002, her husband, Gonzalo, was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. The police interviewed him, and he claimed he killed Mary Kate and buried her in his backyard. At the time, the police had no idea that Mary Kate's body had been found. They searched Gonzalo's home, and of course, they didn't find any human remains. They also didn't find any evidence of a murder. So they dismissed the confession as a delusional statement of a mentally ill man. In 2010, an attorney for Jason Strong filed a motion to get Strong a new trial. By that time, Tweedy had recanted his confession. He said they confessed because the police had threatened him with a lengthy jail sentence. Strong's motion was denied. Then, in 2013, the newly elected state attorney of Lake County started a new unit to investigate questionable convictions. Jason Strong's case was one of them. The following year, three medical examiners reviewed Mary Kate's autopsy report and photos. They made some disturbing conclusions. Mary Kate had been dead for several days when her body was found. Also, some of her wounds had healed. This suggested she had been abused for weeks or even months before her death. This meant that Strong's, Johnson's, and Tweedy's confessions, which they all recanted, did not match the physical evidence. They claimed that Strong met and killed her the day before her body was found. In May 2015, Jason Strong's conviction was overturned and he was released from prison. He had spent 15 years in prison for a murder he did not commit. Strong sued the county in May 2016 and settled for $9 million the following year. So, what does this have to do with Linda LaRoche? Her lawyer hired a forensic pathologist. The pathologist said that Peggy Johnson and Mary Kate Chimizio's murders were so similar that the same person most likely committed them. They argued that this person may be a serial killer who committed other murders. They pointed out that both women's bodies were found 5 months apart, just 35 miles from each other. They shared similar physical attributes and were both cognitively impaired. They were both held captive and tortured before their deaths. Then, their bodies were dumped in rural areas. They both had been extensively burned, and they suffered blunt force trauma to the head and genitals. Finally, they both had distinctive half-loop marks on their bodies. The medical examiners were never able to determine what caused these marks. Finally, both had pneumonia and were malnourished. The appeal also argues that no physical evidence proves that LaRoche killed Peggy, nor does it put her at the site where her body was dumped. But there was male DNA found under Peggy's fingernails that has never been matched to anyone. A hearing to hear the appeal will happen in August 2024. At the time of this recording, 67-year-old Linda LaRoche is in prison in Wisconsin.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.
We have a great show today, but first, take a second to make sure you've subscribed to our show wherever you're listening to podcasts. It's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks.
Please take a moment to follow, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.